St. John's Lutheran Church of Northfield is celebrating its 150th anniversary in 2019. As part of this sesquicentennial, the church is conducting oral history interviews that will help to preserve the history of the church and the experience of our longtime members. Today is June 2nd, 2019. I am Eric Sponheim from the Evangelism and Communications Committee. Today I'm pleased to be joined by a longtime St. John's member, Ruth Hansen. Welcome, Ruth.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Tell me about when you joined St. John's and other members of your family who are members. I know you were here with your one of your daughters this morning.
Yeah. Well, we joined in 1992, the fall. We moved here in August, and then my husband had just retired, and all of a sudden they wanted to come out of retirement to do an interim call. So I stayed here, and he went to Litchfield, and I would go up there on Saturdays and come back, and he would come back with me Sundays, and he'd be here Mondays. So I kind of went around a few times to check churches out, but it was St. John's for several reasons. I liked the liturgy and I liked the music especially, and it was the church where I had attended when I attended St. Olaf College. When we would come down the hill walking, there were no cars to take us down. It was during the Second World War, so there was gas rationing, so once in a while we could take a taxi, but we never did that to come to church. So we walked down with our heels and our gloves and hats, and there was always one of the St. Olaf choirs that sang, and so half of the time I would be up in the balcony singing with the choir, and then other times we'd just be in the pew. So that's when I was acquainted with it to begin with. And then my parents retired here eventually, and he was a pastor too, and he and my mother enjoyed St. Olaf, and being able to get up there and be a part of the alumni. And they joined St. John's, of course, and both of them had their funeral services here. So it was pretty obvious that I would end up here, and then my husband joined me, of course, after a few months.
Weekly worship as a St. Olaf student. Was there daily chapel up at St. Olaf?
Yes, there was daily chapel. It was full of students. Most of them went to chapel. It was amazing. And all of the faculty, it was in the, what is now the theater, it used to be the gymnasium. And now it's, as I say, the theater, but the faculty would be sitting on the floor on chairs, and we would be on the bleachers. And that was every day, well, maybe not Saturday and Sunday, but no, yes, of course, no, Sunday we'd be down here.
Okay. Sounds like there were probably some cold walks then coming down in the winter.
Yes, and we were looked down upon if we'd even think of wearing slacks. And we had Gertrude Hillebaugh was the dean of women, and she was known for being very particular about that. Even on campus for classes, we still wore skirts.
So if someone had tried to wear slacks, they would have been Gertrude Hillebaugh would have busted them.
She would not approve at all. So,
my mother went to Concordia Moorhead from 49 to 53, and said that plenty cold up there as well. And
she
has remarked about how it just wasn't fair that you had to wear a skirt.
Well, I graduated in 45, so I was very close to your mother's age.
I want to ask you about your life in Milwaukee before coming here a little bit, but it's finish listing out your, so you're here, you were in worship just now with your daughter Jo.
No, my daughter Jo came about, must be about 10 years ago. And I had already lived alone. My husband died 4 years after we moved here in 1995. And we had purchased a townhouse. It was being built before as we moved in. And I still had a group of friends from when he was here, I just got to know a lot of people and found it's a very welcoming community, and it's a community that serves all ages so well. And there was always concerts to go to St. Olaf and some over at Carleton, and lectures both places. So it's a wonderful community in which to retire. And then they must have come in about 2005 or six, and maybe, I'm not sure.
So Joe and Dan joined you about 10 years ago.
And they were retired teachers from Denver. And they were here a year, and then St. Olaf came calling on Dan. He's been up there in the admissions department until just now was going to retire. And my second daughter, Julie Zdenek, she said, "Don't ever ask me to come north of St. Louis. It's too cold up there." And all of a sudden, they had three grandchildren moving with their parents to Concordia College in Northwestern Minnesota. She says, "I've got to be closer to those grandchildren." And they thought about it, and so of course, she being an Ole, they and her husband thought, "Well, let's try Northfield where your mom is." So they arrived and built a house. And they found that they loved St. Olaf and loved St. John's, and they're very involved, both of them. And so that we had two children here. And then lo and behold, my baby, my youngest daughter, was getting remarried, and they decided, well, he was an architect in the cities. She was teaching at the college in Mankato. And, well, we could commute from Northfield.
What's her name?
Mary Kay Bougie. And she, originally they joined St. John's, but very shortly thereafter she took a job as the choir and the organist at a rural church outside of Northfield. And then now she's the musician of St. Peter's Lutheran Church in Northfield. And she loves that church and is very busy. Plus she's had voice lessons that she's given, a lot of voice lessons and piano lessons. And she has my three youngest grandchildren. And the last one just graduated a couple of weeks ago from high school. So she'll have three in college next year.
I think the music is a nice segue for you to talk a little bit about your activity in that and your time in Milwaukee. And
I mostly am a choir conductor, and I've done, I think, hundreds of choirs. Probably started out as a high school choir director and discovered I just have a passion for especially high school voices. And developed really good choirs in a couple of different schools, getting my husband through finishing college first and then seminary. And then we moved to Milwaukee. We had a large church there, and I had a high school choir. We built it up to be over 70 voices that sang every Sunday. And then I had to finally take the senior choir too, and so I was very involved. And then in ecumenical choirs, we got started the ecumenical system, or the idea of it was just getting started about that time. And my husband said we should play upon that. So We got together with 11 choirs in the suburb of West Dallas, is where we lived. And we did a big ecumenical service, one of the first in the country that just 1,000 people came out to. And it was really exciting, and the choir, I directed the mixed choir. And then we had to do something every year after that, and finally we were invited to sing with the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra. And that was kind of a highlight in my life to direct that. So, and then when, but by the time I got to St. John's, I was beginning to get a little hard of hearing, and I did a little directing of the women's group with the Welka group for a while, but I realized it was time to quit. So.
Well, you've also had a career as an activist on the Palestine-Israel Peace and Justice Initiative here.
Yes, I was joined the Peace and Justice group right away, and I gave several lectures on the whole Palestinian issue, which was not known very well, and so it mostly was educating people on that there is a wonderful group of Christians in Palestine that are not being recognized. And so I've been able to bring over here the Reverend Dr. Mitri Rahib from Bethlehem, who is getting to be pretty well known around the world as one of the leading speakers for the cause. He is the pastor of Christmas Lutheran Church in Bethlehem. And then a couple of Anglican pastors have been here. The Anglicans and the Lutherans are very close in other countries especially. So that's, and then the community of Northfield has started this Elder Collegium, Cannon Valley Elder Collegium, and I took, you know, many classes in it, and then I was asked to teach archaeology because that became a passion of mine. And so after coming back from the Holy Land the first time, I realized I really was interested in that, so I was able to take some courses at the university under Dr. Malcolm Mansour, who was the head of the Department of Hebrew and Semitic Studies and Archaeology. And then I've attended many, many summer week-long seminars on archaeology. And so I've taught it a lot in churches and community organizations, and then in the Elder Collegium in town. I think I taught 7 classes, mostly on archaeology, but that included some Palestinian ones too.
You mentioned right before we started the recording that about your first trip to Palestine.
Yes.
Say a little bit about that. It was really, I think you were likening the experience they have to Native Americans here.
Yes, very much so. It was in 1968, so it's 51 years ago that we first went.
And that would be the year after a war over there.
Yes,
right?
We were supposed to go the year before, and 1 week before we were to leave, the Six-Day War broke out, so we had to wait a year. And I had a baby, and the congregation found a babysitter. Well, they found it. The president of the congregation and his wife took care of her, and we were gone for 6 weeks because it was a study tour, and she became like one of their grandchildren, of course. And my other children were farmed out because I had 4 others. The oldest one was ready to go to college, so she was working, I think, in a hotel or something to earn money for college, and then we farmed out the other three. So, but going over there, we went over, you know, feeling, oh, isn't this wonderful that Israel now has a land of their own, and we lauded that because we'd done some work with the Jewish Lutherans together. And we got over there, and we had a letter of introduction to a Palestinian family who had relatives in Milwaukee. And we had some letters of introduction to give them. And they proved to be the most hospitable and loving family. And we realized that, oh, the Palestinians are so family-oriented and appreciate their culture, and their homes are full of what they have made and painted, or a lot of nice close embroidery work, just lovely. And so, and then going around and visiting, and our we went under the auspices of this professor from the University of Wisconsin, who was the head of the Hebrew and Semitic studies, and he wanted us to see the Palestinians besides the Jewish side. And so that was wonderful that he was, in fact, he had brought groups there before, and when he couldn't get into Palestine at that time, and now he could, but he had sent a group ahead of him to be in the, go through in the West Bank, and he always used Palestinian drivers and helpers, and he continued to do that because he said, I want to keep supporting them. And so that's when I saw what had really happened. I had never realized that over 400 villages had been completely destroyed by the, it's not the Jewish people. I love the Jewish people. It's the administration, the leaders, and especially when the hardliners got into power. And they were cruel. They, to scare the Palestinians, to make it easier for them to get rid of them and leave their homes, they massacred all the men in one village. And of course that frightened everybody. So when the army would come along and say, get out, they hurried and picked up their, sometimes they were given only a couple hours to leave their homes. And we got to know many of those, including two Anglican pastors. And we've become great friends. So I had to go back. Well, the people in our congregation asked us to take them over the following year. And then we moved to Minnesota. And so people in the congregation there say, well, will you take us? Well, my husband said, that's a lot of work. And it is a lot of work, especially if you're going to make it meaningful. And I always thought with they should learn something when they're on a trip. So I would teach them ahead of time and send out a lot of letters and then meeting with them. And my husband said, you go ahead and do it if you want to do it. So I did, and then they wanted to go elsewhere. So then I started going other countries and ended up, I led over 45 groups overseas.
I'm glad you mentioned that. My colleague Judy Carlson referred me to a Northfield News article about you that appeared recently when you got a service award from the American Association of University Women. And so led historical tours to 40, quoting briefly here from the Northfield News article, Hansen led historical tours to 43 countries, including 20 in the Holy Land. What are some, besides Israel and the occupied territories, like what other countries?
Well, Greece, Italy, Germany, and all the Eastern after the fall of the Berlin Wall, and we did a tour of the East Europe and the Scandinavian countries, British Isles, Spain, and Philippines and China. China and Russia, which was the hardest for me because it was right after Perestroika. And there was a lot of confusion in the tourist industry, so my people enjoyed it, but it was really rough to maneuver it all. And then one of my big things is Bible study, too. And I've done a lot of local parish here many people remember the Bethel series.
Absolutely.
And my husband was in on the first group to go out and into it, first learn it himself, then teach it. And I became one of the teachers. And that was quite exciting. Our church, we figured out it finally ended up 1,000 people had taken it. And then in later years, it was the search Bible study, which was a little bit different, more intense on one book at a time. And I learned to love that, and I had a big class of that in our congregation in St. James, Minnesota. And then just about the time my husband retired was when the ELCA was formed, and it was only the ALC church that had the search series. And so they thought the LCA should have the opportunity to use it too. So I was asked by the headquarters of the new ELCA to be one of 10 that went out to teach all across the U.S. And I did that for several years. It was fun to go out and organize and lead how the whole series worked. You had a presenter and a small group leader and one of the social part of it. So that, and I was still doing that when we went to Northfield. And then when Pastor Jennings Farrell retired, who was one of the associates here at St. John's, he used to lead the women's Bible study leaders, the ones that would lead it in the circles, and he used to do that every month. And he said, well, when he was getting older, and he asked, will you take that? Well, I said, I'll do it a little while. Well, he retired completely after a little bit, and I guess it kept on 10 years. So, and I still do quite a bit of it among my own circle, but.
You are involved in a lot of things. I mean, with the choral conducting, international trips, Bible study, even archaeology.
I know. I've worn a lot of hats.
One of our questions is, what are you most proud of in terms of your service, in terms of your service or leadership roles in the church? I'm not asking you to pick among roles you've mentioned already, but what would you like to add there about what you're most proud of as you look back on it now?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't done as much here probably as I did when my husband was a parish parrot. I loved being a pastor's wife. I never wanted to take a leading role. But I loved assisting, and I love entertaining. I love, I have new members. I couldn't get them all in, but I tried to get as many as possible to the parsonage at some time or other. And so I'm a people person.
Hospitality. Yeah, we need to mention that too, along with conducting and education The Northfield News piece mentioned that you baked a lot of goodies for St. Olaf students over the years.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And like, what was the context for that? What was the occasion?
To begin with, I remember when my husband mentioned we'd lived at our cabin for a couple of years. He said, and when I came home from one of my trips, he said, it's really lonesome when you're gone. And he said, what did you think of moving to Northfield? Well, I jumped on that, I thought, and we always used to come for the Christmas concert, and I always had thought, wouldn't it be nice to, we try to find a place to go out and have coffee before we, after the concert. So I decided, well, I'm going to have that, and send the word out if you want to come over for coffee after the Christmas concert. So I did that for a few years, but then I realized, then my grandchildren started coming to St. Olaf. So I would have invite them down with our friends, their roommates, boyfriends, girlfriends. So several times a year I'd have supper for them. And my husband would help with getting the kids chauffeured over to the place and everything. Well, when he died, I kept on, and sometimes I didn't have time to go and get the children. I got neighbors to go and get them. And I don't know how many, I wish I'd have kept a record of it, but I got to be friends with a lot of the college students. And
wow, so it, through your grandchildren, how many grandchildren went to St. Olaf?
All five went to St. Olaf. And, but now it's the children, you know, all five of my children went, and the 10th grandchild graduates next year.
Oh, okay.
And they've all been over for meals with friends. And now when I moved to the retirement center, I didn't have room, so my daughter Jo and her husband, who's been really good to help, and so he and I sort of entertained the last 3 years over at their place.
You've got so many wonderful traditions here that we'll encapsulate those here within our questions as best we can. I'm coming back, Ruth, to some of the more specific questions now. Who are some of the other St. John's members who have influenced you, or you have influenced? I'll preface this by saying I had heard of the Peace and Justice for Palestine initiative because Vern Fayata is a friend of mine, and he had mentioned it to me a number of years ago. So you probably got him involved in that. Who are some of the other St. John's members besides Vern who have influenced you or you?
Bill Carlson.
Bill Carlson.
And Joe Shaw. Mm-hmm. And Judith Stoutland. And I just love the people of St. John's, and they seem to welcome stories about Palestine. And I belong to a community group now called Northfielders for Justice for Palestine/Israel, and I helped form that 11 years ago. So I'm gradually getting, I'm not doing the hard work anymore because they do big things, get speakers in and have workshops, and so I'm just kind of do what I can, but now with my, I have to use my walker, it isn't so handy, and I'm at 95, I have to sort of slow down.
You're 95 and your work isn't done in a way, because you're still very involved in that.
Well, I like to be involved in the church, and we've had some very good pastors here through the years, and I've enjoyed them all. I appreciate the very good music here.
Oh, that's a perfect segue to the next question, which is, what have you liked about worship and music at St. John's?
You can't beat it. I thought we had some good music in the churches where my husband was a pastor, but you can't surpass St. John's. You have the St. Olaf connection, and when you think they started off with Ephmalius, who retired the year that I entered St. Olaf, And I treasure the fact that one of his leading professors, really under him, was, Overby, Oscar Overby. And I learned so much from him, and he would tell us tales about F. Melius. And one day in class, he said, "Oh, I had to get up in the middle of the night because Christensen called me. He said, 'You've got to come over and help me. I have to kill 21 babies. And he said, wondering what that was. And he got over there and he'd just written a new choral anthem, and he'd written 22 endings to it, the coda. And he had to get rid of 21 of them. So that was, and then Overby was, couldn't come for some reason or other two or three times, and F. Melius filled in, so I did have a few classes from him.
That is a fascinating and illuminating story about the babies. Creating a work, a work of music is like giving birth to a child. Then,
yeah, that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And my mother had sung under F. Melius. Mm-hmm. She was in the first, absolutely the very first choir, called St. Olaf Choir.
This next question is a total softball, Ruth. Do you favorite hymns or songs? Are there a few that are at the very top of your list for hymns?
Yeah. Praise to the Lord. Mm-hmm. The morning star upon us gleams. I have so many.
Praise to the Lord, the Almighty, the King of Creation. Yeah.
Yeah. And those two hymns were called the King and Queen of Hymns one time, and they were written by the same person. So we have good Lutheran heritage in hymns. And, you know, I'm not against the modern and the new also. But I think we have to keep the old too, because there's a message in I was passionate about teaching Sunday school children hymns, so that they would, in fact, we had a huge Sunday school in Milwaukee, so it was sort of three departments, the primary, the intermediate, and then the older youth. So we got a music teacher for each one of those, and I gave them a list of 10 hymns they should teach each year. And so they would come out with, and I said, you need to teach the first stanza. Except Beautiful Savior, you have to do this. No, except the Reformation hymn.
Mighty Fortress.
Mighty Fortress. Because at the end of the first stanza, you were giving the glory
wins.
To the devil.
Exactly.
But so they got, and you could see this, and I tell the pastor to be sure to choose some of those hymns each Sunday. And when I'd be sitting up in the choir loft, when they would sing a hymn they'd been taught, they would grin over at me. They could sing it without looking at the hymn book.
Let's talk about the change you've seen over time. You had that look at St. John's in the 1940s as a St. Olaf student, and then that was really quite a long time to be away, wasn't it?
Yes.
From 1945 to 92. 45 to 92, but now you've been here for
20 years.
27 yeah. years. So what trends have you seen?
I like the fact that it's more it's looser, and you're freer to clap and laugh and I mean, I think, well, my husband would be loose in his, you know, he would, he used a lot of contemporary stuff in his, but it was, he would stay a little closer to the liturgy that was written. Fortunately, there were some new liturgy coming out early on, but now it's, I think the pastors choose such wonderful parts of the liturgy and reword some of it, making it more contemporary. Well, it's hard to describe, I guess, but we have to be up with the times. But St. John has not let it become trashy, or I shouldn't say trashy, but, you know, some churches, you sing only these songs, you know, praise him, praise him, praise him. Mm-hmm. And the old hymns have literature. It's really wonderful poetry that you, the essence of Christian living. And our music, Nathan here now, and the pastors use hymns that they're more not as theological, but still not too, it's hard to describe it, subjective.
So it's keeping rooted in Christian tradition without being stuffy.
And
we've done, I think what you're saying is we've done better at that recently.
Much better.
But we don't want to go throw the baby out with the bathwater and go too far and just praise music doesn't really lift the mind at all.
Well, and of course the congregation here is different. It's full of retired professors and regular professors, teachers, a lot of artists. The arts are so important in this church. So we see wonderful pictures around the place, sculptures, and it's been a part of St. John's, and I appreciate that so much, and I think that's because God works in many ways. When you think of, when you look at, you get a good painting, you can get a sermon out of that too.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the music, of course, and we've had, you know, good sculptors and architects in this church.
Right, it's tremendous strength to build on. I had the privilege of interviewing Bobby Mockestead about 6 weeks ago, she brought out a couple of watercolors of John, and then there's the one of the entrances here.
I have one. I had always wanted one of his. He lectured a group of us one time, and he had shown some of his. And I told my kids I'm going to save up money to get one of those. And one birthday they got together and said, okay, you go and pick out a Moxton. And then he and his wife had them come over to show where I would put it, and he chose one that just fits perfectly. So I appreciate that.
Last question, Ruth. Or do you have any final reflections that you would want to add that we haven't touched upon? Or I want to ask you one last question about just your hopes for the future for St. John's. Do you have anything you want to add that we haven't touched upon?
I think I've said too much already.
Oh, no, I don't think that.
But I just want, it's hard for me now, I want to urge people to come to St. John's. It's so good. And it has so much. With my two daughters that are in the choir here, they said, where else would you, many of the anthems we sing, they ask the composer to come down and direct it. So sometimes Armstrong has come down, and sometimes Ferguson, and he's, you know, they've all of those musicians have been a part of St. John's, and you just don't have that in an ordinary congregation.
What are your hopes for the future for St. John's?
I think just keep on with what they've been doing. They don't need to change, except, you know, with the flow of things, I'm sure they'll. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how many more years I'll be around. I don't see and I don't hear very well either of them, but I'm healthy. And so I might last for a while yet. My dad lived to be 103, so. So I'll just keep doing what I've done, and I'm happy that I have children that'll take me to church.
I felt the Spirit talking with you, Ruth. I felt the Spirit talking with you. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.